866-5857.
Head Games Radio with Nick Lowry is leadership and performance psychology both on and off the playing field. And there's no one better to bring it to you than Nick Lowry, who after being cut by 8 teams 11 times, became the most accurate kicker in NFL history. It's all about performance under pressure, in competition, and in life. And now, here's your host, Nick Lowry.
Welcome to Head Games Radio today. It's going to be a special day. We've got one of the interesting new leaders, if you will, on the baseball scene over the last few years, a guy that took over the Red Sox when he was 28 years of age, a guy that was a reserve infield player in high school, a man who went to Yale, got his law degree while he was working for the San Diego Padres, a guy that could have been paid twice as much to go into law, but whose love always has been baseball. Theo Epstein's going to be joining us in a few minutes, and we're very lucky to have him. And it's been interesting to combine the insight that Theo has into baseball with his friend Josh Burns, who actually went to my high school back in the day at St. Albans School and has an interesting combination of evaluating things from the money ball side, the dollars and cents side, but also the insight into people themselves. Theo Epstein, thanks so much for joining us.
For having me on.
You know, let's start off with just the fact that you played baseball maybe three-quarters of a mile from Fenway Park. And all of us, I remember thinking back in the day, and I'm so much older, but, you know, Mickey Mantle, Sandy Koufax, those people that I envisioned being when I grew up. Who was your hero? Who was the person that you thought of when you envisioned yourself playing baseball?
Well, favorite player growing up was Jim Rice, and always thought I'd, if I worked hard enough, I'd play shortstop for the Red Sox someday. And luckily, I guess, for my career, I was able to tell at a pretty young age that wasn't going to happen. So I didn't didn't get caught wasting too many years in that pursuit, but it was fun to grow up so close to Fenway and have the Red Sox be a big part of my family's life and then get to go on and work for them. So it's been special.
Well, Theo, we're going to go to our first break. When we come back, we want to talk. We're going to have a good solid 12 minutes with you to talk about, you know, where this whole process began and the way that you came into the position that you are in, the resolution to the power, not power struggle, but certainly the need to resolve your role on the Red Sox. And in particular, what we try to do on the show is talk about somebody like yourself who helped an organization overcome the psychological weight, if you will, of the curse of the Bambino. When we come back, Theo Epstein, perhaps the most respected young general manager in all of baseball, in just a minute. Welcome back to Head Games Radio with Theo Epstein. I'm sure, Theo, that you have long since put aside the questions about age itself, but playing the role of the general manager of the Red Sox and making it a dream, how did you separate yourself out? When it was sort of like Christmas for you, how did you to keep your wits about you with all the expectations, the intensity of the Boston fans themselves watching every move? How did you keep your wits about you in those first couple years?
Well, I think I was pretty well prepared by the time I got the job at GM here. I had a couple things going for me. I had 10 years of experience working in front offices by the time I became a GM, so I learned early on that you really have to separate the fan in you from the executive in you and maintain your objectivity at all times. And in order to make good decisions and be a leader in the organization, you really have to be a bit dispassionate at times, and that helped because there is so much passion from the fans' perspective in Red Sox Nation. Two, I was able to spend a year working for the Red Sox as the assistant general manager, so I was able to get a feel for the whole organization and what we did well, what we didn't do well. And third, having grown up in Boston, I think I was as prepared as you can be for the intensity of the spotlight with the fans and media here and was able to adjust a little bit and not get caught off guard.
Well, you have such a successful family that were able to be successful in their own right in very different fields, and you're a twin like myself, and I wonder how interesting that is to have a brother who I believe is a social worker at Brookline High School and is a girls' soccer coach. How do you stay grounded, and was the attempt to get away from it all earlier this year and last year really about finding that right balance because the spotlight had gotten so intense?
No, it really didn't have anything to do with that. Well, first off, it's pretty easy to stay grounded. You know, baseball is a very humbling game. You know, when you play 162 games and a lot of ups and downs, so you have to find an even keel. And really, for the whole organization, I think it starts at the top. So not getting too high when you're doing well, not getting too low is really important. And you know, it's pretty easy to stay grounded in this job because if you get too full of yourself, you'll get humbled pretty quickly. And you know, the events this winter wasn't really a personal issue at all. It was an institutional organizational issue where we had to reconnect and make sure that everyone involved, ownership and upper management, had the same priorities, the same values, the same ideas about how to run an organization. Because as you know, you can't really be effective in leading an organization if you're not all on the same page as far as what you're trying to accomplish and how you want to accomplish it, what values and priorities are at the very top of the list for the organization. So sometimes when you have success, you can start to drift apart as far as those important things go, and reconnecting and talking about the future and how you want to get there is very, very important.
Well, let's talk about that for a second with Larry Lucchino and, of course, all of the projections as to what was happening. Just going to read the statement. Ironically, Theo's departure has brought us closer together in many respects, and thanks to these conversations, we now enjoy the bonds of a shared vision for the organization's future that did not exist on October 31st. As you look back now, how do you believe that you all are much more on the same page? What is the key distinction that has happened? Is it that you have clear final say in the most important decisions of the team?
No, it's not. It's never the issue of final say or power. It's you could take that statement at face value. It's that you know, we now do a better job, and we should have all along, but we now do a better job of discussing what's important to us, where we're going, how we're going to get there, what exactly are we trying to accomplish as an organization. You know, and you have to balance things in baseball all the time. You have to balance the budget versus performance on the field. You have to balance present needs versus future needs. It's a constant balancing act where if you're not on the same page philosophically, you won't be able to execute properly in the moment. So I think we've just done a much better job of sort of communicating with each other throughout the organization to make sure that our priorities are in order, allowing us to then execute with that goal in mind.
We talked about Roger Goodell and the key well-established, well-oiled machine with Paul Tagliabue that Roger Goodell essentially has helped manage over the last few years. As you look at the well-oiled machine you have now and the relationships with Lucchino and with your lieutenants, Jed Hoyer and Ben Cherington, can you give us just a quick feel for the different roles each one plays as you evaluate talent?
It's more than evaluating talent. I mean, as we run the whole organization, Larry is the CEO, so he's in charge of every department, has direct reports. I'm his direct report with respect to baseball operations, and I run the baseball operations department. And Jed Hoyer and Ben Charrington are two of the guys that run it with me in our circle. But it's been great. There's been really, you know, no talk of roles or boundaries or limitations. I think that there really is a good spirit of being in it together. And, you know, there are different management styles. Here we tend to all kind of jump in the foxhole together and make sure everything that gets done needs to get done, rather than getting too caught up in job descriptions and you know, reporting lines and things of that nature.
Well, here's somebody who's learned a lot from you.
Well, I think, you know, Bob Melvin does run our club day to day, and you know, I think to sort of simplify it, maybe it isn't this simple. You know, I sort of have more macro responsibility, and Bob has more micro responsibility. He's got 162 games. He's in the fray. I'm able to sort of have a little more perspective on longer view, whether that season or multiple seasons. And obviously, we both compete hard every day and talk about it, but as far as, you know, direct interaction with the players, obviously that's his job primarily.
That's Josh Burns. What did you lose when you lost to Josh Burns to the D-backs? Certainly he was ready. He was ripe for the picking. He had studied that rich combination of evaluation techniques and also, of course, the important interpersonal relationships. Dick Vermeil has been on the show 5 times talking about the fact that really his ability to develop trust and quality relationships with his players is probably more important than anything. Tell us about Josh Burns.
Yeah, we lost a lot with Josh, but it was as tough as it was to see him go. It was also a very proud moment for the organization and for me because he really was ready, and I think his experience with the Red Sox added some elements to his resume and his character and his personality that he might not have gotten anywhere else. But Josh was my right hand man, an integral part of the leadership and management of this organization, and has a great feel for all aspects of being a top baseball executive. Not only his ability to scout, his ability to understand people, his ability to see the big picture, as he alluded to in that clip. But it's also his ability to relate one-on-one and develop trusting relationships. So he's the whole package, and I learned an awful lot from Josh while he was here, and certainly admire the job he's done so far in Arizona.
We had NBA Commissioner David Stern on the show last Thursday talking about how when you ask more of people, i.e. USA Basketball, that you often get more. You usually get more. If you ask little, expect little, you usually get that as well. What did you expect of this Boston Red Sox team when you took over that allowed them to think of themselves as capable of indeed overcoming the so-called curse, capable of not letting any of those psychological distractions, all the other expectations outside the organization, that they actually could put together that magic that so many people have written about the last couple of years?
Right. Well, again, as Josh alluded to in the clip, it's really the field manager, in this case Terry Francona, who communicates most directly with the players on a day-to-day basis, eats, sleeps, and breathes and lives baseball with them 162 games. And he's done a great job of keeping the guys focused in the now rather than looking backwards and at the team's history and not having won since 1918 and not looking forward too much about what might be around the corner. As far as overcoming it in the front office and with the team that I lead here with our front office and scouts, I think it was just a question of identifying how good we needed to be, what we needed to accomplish in order to put our team in a position where they could win and overcome those things. And really, I remember that first organizational meeting, we challenged every member of the baseball operations department to work harder than their 29 counterparts around the league, think more creatively than their 29 counterparts around the league, and find a way to help us win more than their 29 counterparts would. And I think, really everyone responded to that message, and soon we had, what I think was probably among the hardest working front offices in baseball, among the most creative, and we found a way to make it work with that message.
And it also seems like when you have owners that seem as enlightened, which I think is the best word for it, and John Henry and Tom Werner, that makes a huge difference as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It all starts with ownership, and you can have a dynamic front office, but if it's not supported by ownership, it's not going to go anywhere. And really, it doesn't happen that way. It starts with a dynamic ownership group that puts the right people in place and enables them with the resources, with support, with the right message, with a clear vision. And you can't go anywhere without terrific ownership, and we're very, very lucky to have that here.
We're going to go to a break, and when we come back, we can beg you for just 2 minutes to go over this team, go over what is the essence of the way that you look at players, whether it is the personality, whether you manage a Pedro Martinez who's since gone, or a Big Poppy, or Johnny Damon, or Schilling, the guys that have come and gone, and how you continue to have one of the best organizations and teams in baseball. Final thoughts with Theo Epstein when we come back.
Join Head Games Radio. Call 800-878-PLAY. That's 800-878-7529. And now, here's your host, Nick Lowry.
And he belts one to center. And goodbye. Well, he got a little something to hit, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. That was that pitch had a whole lot of the plate. Certainly not what Mark Redmond wanted.
So a walk and a home run. Red Sox have a 2-0 lead here in the first. Manny Ramirez, yet another home run at the expense of the Royals.
Theo Epstein, Manny Ramirez, Johnny Damon, Curt Schilling, Big Poppy David Ortiz, all of them different personalities, and it came together in that big season. Let's focus on the way that you manage these guys to make them feel free. You talk about the manager, but you also have to create the space for the manager to allow for those sort of stylistic decisions, to let them grow their hair, to let them, like Manny Ramirez, basically do his own thing.
Yeah, back in 04, we made a conscious decision to kind of let the guys be themselves and have fun, whether it was growing out their hair, wearing their uniform a certain way, and try to create a bit of a free spirit in our clubhouse. For years, you know, the Red Sox, I think, have suffered by the intensity of the media scrutiny, both physically in the clubhouse and in spirit with the way the team is covered and how it's reflected in the marketplace. So giving guys some freedom, letting them have fun, I think really went a long way that year in helping them get past some of the scrutiny and really focus on themselves and what they were doing. And by the time the game rolled around, it was just another extension of the fun they were having.
Okay, just a couple more questions, because we know that you've got many things daily to deal with, but you got injuries. Those are the things that it's hard to manage and predict. Mark Loretta's left elbow, Keith Foulke is coming back, Doug Mirabelli missed the last four games with a sprained left ankle. How do you work that into the mix? How do you have that as part of this sort of mathematical formula in predicting the unpredictable?
Well, I mean, the way you deal with injuries in the off season is you try to game plan to expect the injuries and build depth or redundancy at as many positions as you can. We're in a tough stretch right now, having lost our right fielder, starting catcher, and several pitchers, but that presents an opportunity. You know, adversity throughout the course of the year is what really defines the club, how they respond to that adversity. And right now we're probably facing our most adversity this season, having lost four in a row with all our injuries and about to start a really tough part of the schedule. So this is the time that we either come together as a team and overcome that adversity and define ourselves and come out stronger on the other side, or we get swallowed up in it. And, you know, this team, the individuals in that clubhouse, the type of character that they have a good track record of overcoming adversity, and that's what we look forward to.
Coco Crispez, this is the first time I've been on a team of this stature that had the ability to do anything. If he felt like, that is you, like he needed to do something, he would have done something. Final question for you, Theo, then, is what went into your decision to not do anything with regard to trades? Is there still something out there, like with our friend Josh Burns, with Levon Hernandez, is there still something possible in the next week or two?
Yeah, there's always things possible. We ended up acquiring a catcher, Javi Lopez, after Jason Varitek went down. But our biggest need in the bullpen right now, there's not a lot out there. We do really need to rely on the guys that we have. And there was not a conscious effort not to do anything. We were extremely aggressive in exploring every possible avenue. But sometimes in balancing the present and the future, you know, you can't trade huge pieces of your future for incremental fixes over the next 2 months. And, you know, the only deals we could have done, I said the other day, were deals that if we had actually done them, I should have resigned on the spot, because they would have been irresponsible and self-serving and short-sighted. And we just can't do those things. You know, we have to plan to be extremely competitive and have a chance to win the World Series every single year, not just 1 year.
Well, we're going to have Josh Burns on soon as well. Final message to Josh we can pass along, Theo?
Keep winning. It'd be nice to meet up again in October.
All right, my friend. Well, good luck for the Red Sox the rest of the year. Appreciate you making the time for us, and we really have a lot of respect for you and what you've done with that organization, sir.
All right, Nick. Thanks a lot. Good luck
with
you.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. That's Theo Epstein.